Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. The hotline is brought to you by Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. The first call, the only call, and we now go to the Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning hotline for a chat about the Canucks opponent tomorrow. He is the play-by-play voice for the Washington Capitals on Monumental Sports. He is Joe Beninati. Joe, thank you very much for joining us today. How are you?
Jamie and Thomas, my pleasure. It's a beautiful day in Vancouver. You can't do much better than that.
Yeah, it sure is. We are all very, very excited here.
Enjoy it, man.
It's been a rough late winter for us, so we're thrilled with this weather. I'm glad you're getting a chance to enjoy it as well. So, look, still, I mean, always a big deal, a fun event when Alex Ovechkin and the Washington Capitals are in town. And, you know, this team's still right there in the Eastern Conference playoff race. If you had to kind of sum up this Washington Capitals season, this team this year, how would you describe them?
It's an interesting question because this team's been up and down. It's been erratic. It's had moments where they look like they can contend with anyone. And then it's also had moments where they look like they're a bottom feeder. Right now, coming off of the win that they achieved an evening ago in Seattle, they feel great about themselves. The night before, they got run over in Edmonton. They don't feel so hot about themselves. Really, that's been the season in microcosm from the outset. But every time, Jamie and Thomas, I want to bury them, every time I want to stick a fork in them, they manage to show me the character and the grit that's required to keep up the pace, to have a fun race in the last quarter of the season, to contend for whether it be third or fourth place in the Metro or one of those Eastern Conference wild card spots. All of a sudden, they find themselves in really good shape with regard to that race, and it'll happen right on the heels of an upsetting performance. You know, they'll throw a clunker in against Edmonton, and you'll be like, "All right, there it is. That's it. They're done. Let's start writing the eulogy." And then all of a sudden, boom! They bounce back in Seattle, and then they come to Vancouver, a place that's treated them well. I want to say the Caps have won six of the last seven in this city. Keep the hopes up. Keep the fires burning.
When you know, you talk about the Caps' sort of core inconsistency over the course of the season, the high highs, the low lows. I mean, what is this team stylistically? Because I've been watching them close all year, and I still can't answer that question. What do they want to do game to game?
They want to play a pressure game. They know they're not built anymore to really win 5-4, 6-5 the way they used to be. Their goal scoring was dreadful in the first half of the season, guys. They knew it. Their power play production was awful. And all of a sudden now that power play production's there. They produced 9 of 10 power play goals and 9 of 10. I want to say it goes to back as much as 14 of 17 with power play goals. That's sort of old school. That's like what we used to see. That hasn't been the case all season long. They do want to play pressure. I think Spencer Carberry made a very interesting shift in philosophy and schematically around the mid-season mark. Mm. And I can't say enough about Spencer and his staff. I think they've done a terrific job. They've pushed back on some of the things, especially in the neutral zone. There are neutral zone concepts that they've changed that I think have allowed them to hang around more with the upper-level squads. They were doing some things early in the season where if you're playing a Vancouver or you're playing a top-end Colorado squad, a Florida squad, you can't do it. You don't have the horses to get it done. They've modified what they've been doing, and they managed to keep a grip on these top teams. The Vancouver game on Super Bowl Sunday in D.C., I know they had a couple of one-goal leads in that game. They let it slip late in overtime, but to hang around and be in the neighborhood with a squad as strong as Vancouver, I don't think that would have happened in the first couple of months. It has happened more in the last 2 months, and that's one of the reasons why they've been more competitive.
obviously, whenever we talk about the Capitals, and especially now, so much focus on Alex Ovechkin and the goal pursuit, the record, chasing Wayne Gretzky, obviously. But, you know, even beyond that, we know he got off to the slow start. Then there's been some bright moments for him this season as well. But even beyond the goal scoring and the record, what's Alex Ovechkin bringing on kind of a game-to-game, shift-to-shift basis for the Capitals this year?
I would say Spencer Carberry would compliment him on his attitude. I think he's been a very strong leader, captain for this group. You're talking about a guy who was there, obviously, at the forefront of the core of the Stanley Cup winner in 2018. I think the Caps are identifying their core moving forward. You can judge by who they've signed to long-term extensions. Players like Tom Wilson, like Dylan Strome, Rasmus Sandin, Alexei Protas recently. That's the core moving forward beyond Alex's time. But while he's here, obviously, he's incredibly well-respected. His attitude has been good. His energy level has been much better, I think, in the last 6 weeks than we would have been saying in the first 2 months. The puck's going in for him. That helps him. That puts a smile on his face. There was a time when he was just totally snake-bit earlier in the year and wasn't even generating those chances that we're so used to. Now they're there. Specifically earlier this week in the game in Edmonton, he had three phenomenal chances. Could have had four goals in that game. Stuart Skinner's best work in that game was against the Grade 8. Easily could have been a multi-goal performance for him. That's good. That's a great sign for this team offensively. When Alex is visible, throwing some body checks a little bit more, I think his physical game, just for self-preservation, he doesn't throw as many bone-jarring hits as he used to, but when he does get involved physically, that tends to get the juices flowing creatively, offensively. He's been much more involved, but overall, I think he's been really working well with the likes of John Carlson, TJ Oshie, Tom Wilson, as that core leadership group. Those guys are getting some good things done, mentoring some of the young talent that's now starting to flourish for Washington.
When we last saw these two teams play, you know, the Capitals outplayed the Canucks, frankly, but gave them a gift late in the contest to allow them to win in overtime. Yeah. And then they got that gift given back to them in the Pacific Northwest yesterday by Joey Decord. What do you expect from a rematch between these two sides?
Well, I know Washington has a great deal of respect for the firepower that Vancouver possesses. I know they're being without Thatcher Demko. That's interesting, although Casey DeSmith, who I assume will play, has always performed well against Washington back to his Pittsburgh days. There is the thought, guys, Jamie and Thomas, that you do not want to trade punches with Vancouver, and especially in the Canucks barn, where when they get going, they can really tattoo you. They will play, like I was saying at the top of this this conversation, they'll try to play a more lower event game. If they try to, again, you play run and gun against that team, that's a mistake. If you do that against Florida, that's a mistake. They committed penalties against Edmonton. Big mistake. They have to try and play the game conservatively, and I think they've recognized that. And in the past, guys, they were always able to outscore their mistakes. They're not capable of doing that anymore, so they have to play a more conservative game. There can't be turnovers that feed Vancouver's transition. It's got to be a very simple, almost, boring type of game, and then pounce upon opportunities. Now, last night was a perfect example of getting two gifts from Seattle that turned into a win. You don't expect that from a Vancouver squad, but you want to make sure that this game is competitive into the second period, into the second half of the game. And by doing so, I think they'll play a conservative style. It'll be some dump and chase. It'll be some work on the boards. And assuming that Charlie Lindgren gets the go, when Lindgren is playing well, they can compete with anyone, because he's had this ability all season long to make these tremendous saves against high danger chances, the type of chances that Vancouver, with its, three different 30 goal scorers, you guys create those chances. Charlie, if he's at his best, helps negate those, helps keep the Caps around. I don't think Lindgren's ever played against Vancouver. This would be interesting if he gets the shot tomorrow.
Joe, really appreciate the time and the look at the Washington Capitals. Glad you're getting a chance to enjoy some nice weather here, and hopefully the game's a good one tomorrow.
My pleasure, guys. Let's do it again.
Absolutely. That is Joe Beninati, Washington Capitals play-by-play voice for Monumental Sports. And, yeah, we've talked before on the show how difficult it is to pin down the Washington Capitals. And even Joe, who watches them every game, is like, yeah, I don't know. They're erratic. They're up and down. They're all over the place. You don't know what you're going to get from them.
It's funny because I do think they found something in Carberry. Right? Like, I think that was a really good coaching hire for them. I think you've seen that over the course of the season. It just feels like such an interesting mismatch. And now you've sort of got, but you've got this sort of layer of younger guys with McMichael, LaPierre. They have one other guy.
Protest.
No, it's, yes, but he's a little more established. Miro, I can't pronounce the name.
Oh, Miro Shevchenko?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The gentleman who whose draft stock fell because he was battling cancer, right?
Yes.
And he recently scored his first NHL goal, which is a fantastic story. So they've sort of begun to get this younger layer of guys in, but obviously those guys aren't really like established top of the lineup pieces. And then you've got kind of the old guard, and they're still competent kind of on defense. They've got like a lot of competent players, including, of course, old pal Ethan Bear. It's one of those, it's like, they're just so mid. And I think that's really it. Just don't overthink it in terms of trying to figure out what they are. They're just a super mid team with a unique set of priorities in that, you know, I think their hockey operations philosophy really does surround the effort to get Ovechkin past Gretzky's record as opposed to something a little more conventional.
Which is 100% the right call in my view. Like, I think if you have a chance...
I'm not criticizing it.
Yeah, I know. I just wanted... If you have a chance to get your guy that record, yes. Especially because you've already won a cup with him, right? So it should be your priority, at least as I see it.
Presumably there's, you know, value in having that record set, you know, by someone, you know, you'll have Ovechkin nights for generations,
yeah.
Right?
It's hard to think of a... You know, there's only a handful of players more closely connected with their franchise in NHL history than Alex Ovechkin.
Yep.
And the Washington Capitals. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Rich in Cloverdale texts in. We were talking earlier about a lot of the Canucks pending UFAs, and he says, hey guys, here's an interesting question. Which of the Canucks pending UFAs would be most likely to not repeat their performance from this year if we were to bring them back next year? That's from Rich in Cloverdale. So basically, who's the biggest regression or at least performance dip candidate of the pending UFAs? And it is an interesting question because I don't know that I necessarily look at the key guys and see a lot of like classic signs of they're playing over their head or they're definitely going to decline in performance next year. I mean, if we're talking Tyler Myers, you know, before he got injured, well, he's already has the most points he's had in a season in Vancouver, right? Mm-hmm. So there, and if he didn't get injured, there's a good chance he'd maybe crest even his last season in Winnipeg. So just in terms of raw offensive production, you probably shouldn't expect Tyler Myers to equal that because he's surpassing what he's done in the previous four seasons here in Vancouver. But beyond that, like, yeah, Dakota Joshua has found a new level, but I wouldn't necessarily look at what he's done and say, oh, he couldn't repeat that or he couldn't repeat that somewhere else.
Well, 10.5 on ice shooting percentage, 104.4 PDO, because also a 939 on ice save percentage. Those are indicators to be mindful of for sure. I think across the board, my picks would be the three forwards, like Bluger. Bluger's going to hit a career high in points if he hasn't already done so. 24 points, his career high is 28. So, you know, even if he stays on the fourth line, I think he'll at least match his career high in points. And he's going to do it in a year, you know, where he'll have missed 20 games, right? Or at least 12 games. So 12 to 15. His numbers don't look as overheated, though, as Lafferty's and Joshua's. Right, in terms of
Lafferty's probably the answer, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, it's Lafferty. I would put all three of them together. You know, like, I think if you're signing Bluger to be a 30-point center who's capable of playing a regular third-line shift and contributing offensively, like to a line that's both carrying play and chipping an offense, I think that's a little much. Like, I think that's more than, he's historically done. Maybe I mean, I've always been a fan of his game.
It is interesting, though, because you're right. Like, he's probably going to match his career high. But, you know, he had 22 points in 43 games earlier in his career, right?
Yep.
So, like, he's maybe you want to factor this in, too, that he has missed time with injury in other seasons, right? But you know what I mean? So in terms of, like, a rate or a per game, it's not too far off what he's done in other campaigns, what he's doing this year.
Yeah.
Now, again, do you want to lock that in and count on him being your third-line center, or do you want to maybe roll the dice that Connor Garland can do that for somebody else, too?
It just depends on the price. I mean, when you're talking about third-line centers in the NHL, you're talking about $4 million players. Right? Like, and I don't think that's what you're talking about when you're talking about extending Filip Hronek. I don't think that's what the Canucks are talking about when they're talking about, sorry, did I say
Teddy
Filip Hronek?
Yeah.
Teddy Bluger. You know, I think you're still looking at him signing in that Lars Eller, Nick Bjugstad sort of, maybe there's a little bit of cap growth inflation where you're talking about $2.5 to $3 million
mm-hmm.
for like a good, and he's sort of valued as like good bottom six centerman.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he's going to regress from that level necessarily. I don't think that's something we should expect, although you have to be mindful of term with a guy who is going to turn 30 at some point
yep.
this summer. So for me, I sort of come back to Lafferty and Joshua. You know, Joshua's shot 16% 5-on-5, super high PDO. You know, there's a lot of the indicators that I tend to look for when picking regression candidates, but I also think that his profile is so unique, you know, as like a real like middleweight heavy guy responsible defensively. I think untapped upside on special teams because we haven't seen him at the net front enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see that, especially given how efficient he's been as a finisher this year, given his size. Given what we've seen from him, like in that Sharks game when he's had a shot.
Yeah. Given what we've seen from the power play.
Yeah.
I know he hasn't been an option right now, but I mean, there's a fifth spot open. And we're two of Connor Garland's biggest fans here. We've been very pro Connor Garland, but he's spending a lot of time being left alone on the power play right now, being ignored by other teams on the power play from whatever side he's on. And look, I think it was totally worth giving Connor Garland a try there, but there's very much a spot open, and I think, yeah, why not try Dakota Joshua? You're using JT Miller at the net front. You're using Elias Pettersson at the net front. Put him there. Let those guys go where they do their thing really, really well.
So anyway, to come back to the answer, I'd say the three forwards across the board for different reasons, right?
Yeah, the interesting thing with Joshua is that you're probably right. There's the indicators there that, you know, you shouldn't necessarily expect the same rate of offensive production, but it's just that I can still see him being very, very valuable, even if the offensive production declines.
Oh, I'm not.
You know what I mean?
I'm definitely not throwing any buyer beware on Dakota Joshua until you're getting above like three. Once you start to get above $3.5 million, now I'm like beginning. But even $3.5 million with 9% cap growth to me is not that wild. You know, honestly. Like a $3 million valuation is more like 2.5.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all if he gets 3, 3.5.
No.
Right?
So, you know, and that's not a contract that I'd like knee-jerk suggest is a bad bet, even though there's some parts of his statistical profile that make him a regression. Like, he's a regression candidate for me. He's not a buyer beware candidate for me. Does that
make
sense?
Right. Well, yeah, because you can, just because a player might regress from what they've done doesn't mean you shouldn't want them on your team.
Yeah.
You just have to factor that in when you're setting your expectations and when you're bidding on them and everything. But they can still be a really good player for you.
In part, I think it's because Joshua's two-way, like I'm so bought into Joshua's two-way value and penalty killing value and physical value that for me, the offensive production, and I mean, it's worth noting, like, this guy was on pace for almost 40 points.
Yeah.
Like, he was crushing it. But for me, that's, I can lose even 25% of that. And I'm still happy with the belief that Joshua can bring something unique and valuable to the team.
Yeah, the penalty killing is a good shout. And then I also think, man, see him, I'd love to see him in the top six for a stretch on the power play in the net front for a stretch. But you've got openings in those spots. You've got at least guys you can mix in and out and try different combinations.
You're saying like this year?
Yeah. When he comes back.
Joshua, Pettersson, Hoglander.
Hoglander?
Yeah, I'm here for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or Joshua Miller.
Joshua Miller Besser?
I like that too.
I think both of those are 100% worth trying out when he gets back. Now, we don't have a timeline yet, and we'll see going into the playoffs and all that and when he's back, but Absolutely. I would love to see that given what he's done.
Especially worth seeing before you sign him for 3.5 times 3, if that's what it looks like. I don't know that it is, right? That's just me thinking about it. But 40-point, 6'3" guys who can kill penalties, are 200 pounds and can fight and hit. One of the league leaders in hits when he got hurt.
And then if you add, can play with a JT Miller or Elias Pettersson type and help them, like can complement and work in that role. Well,
if he's a digger, you get into a totally, a heavy press, right? Mm-hmm. The Hyman type, right? If you get to a point where you're capable of complementing skill players, then all bets are off. Then you're a huge asset.
Yeah, then you're super, super in demand.
And I guess that's the one thing we haven't seen him do.
Yep.
So he's done everything else. And I sort of look at the guy and think, man, I don't see a reason he couldn't do that.
It's at least worth getting a look at. It's at least something you want to try.
He's got the hands in tight, you know, like he really does.
We've seen it.
I'm here. Well, this is a new official show position.
Joshua in the top six. Let's go.
We got to see it.
We do. We need to see it.
I'm with you. I'm on board.
We'll take a break.
I'm signing your petition.
That's right. Yeah, success. We'll take a break. Final hour coming up here on Canucks Talk. Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I'll tell you what we're waiting for. We're waiting for Batch to send in the Rick Tocchet audio from practice today. And if we do get that in this segment, we'll get it turned around and play it for you ASAP. But until then, we'll dive into the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. And this text came in. Hello, Canucks Talk crew. Is Elias Pettersson elite? Please refer to my conversation this morning with Halbro, LOL. That is unsigned text. Well, I didn't catch the conversation on Halford and Brough this morning, but obviously a hot topic of conversation around the city right now. We waded into it a little bit yesterday, but, you know, kind of following up on the conversation we had yesterday, Drancer, I was doing some digging and looking around and poking around Natural Stat Trick before the show today, just to kind of get a sense of, like, okay, what are the actual raw numbers here in terms of what Elias Pettersson has been doing? And I think there's been a perception that recently his game has fallen off from where it was even earlier in the year. So I was just looking pre-January 1st, so October, November, December, post-January 1st. The first part of the season, points per 60, 5-on-5, all right? He was at 2.62 points per 60. Very good number. That was second on the team behind Ilya Mikheyev, which is very funny. Of course, Mikheyev was spending a lot of time playing with Elias Pettersson at that time. So 2.6, basically, points per 60 before January 1st, before the new year. Since the new year, he's at 2.85. So it's actually gone up in the new year, in January, February, in March. Now, JT Miller is at 2.9, so just a hair above Elias Pettersson. JT is playing absolutely phenomenal hockey.
Yes,
recently.
Yes.
We can all agree on that. Those two are both playing absolutely phenomenal hockey. So you take that 2.85 over his last 31 games, that would rank fifth in the NHL over the whole year, behind McDavid, MacKinnon, Kucherov, Pasternak. That's it. Those are the four players who, over the course of the whole season, have scored at a faster rate 5-on-5 than Elias Pettersson has in his last 31 games. So, yeah, he's elite. Like, and you look at over the course of the whole year, he's seventh in that stat. If that's not elite offensive production, I don't really understand what is elite offensive production. And I think this, again, these are 5-on-5 numbers. So I think one, this says to me that one of the things I mentioned on the show yesterday is playing a big role here, which is that the power play struggles, right? Like if you sprinkle in 5 or 6 extra power play points over the last 2 months for Elias Pettersson, I think it looks a lot different. And the perception of him is a lot different than it has been recently. The one thing I will say is that if you go beyond just the scoring numbers at 5-on-5 and you look at, you know, the play driving numbers, what he's doing relative to the rest of his teammates in terms of driving scoring chances, giving up scoring chances, all of those things, those are softer than we typically see from Elias Pettersson over the last 31 games since the new year. So I think, again, and I've never sat here and said, like, he's playing the best hockey of his career. I agree that you can see more from him. But I think it's very telling that over a stretch where people are wanting to see more, where people are raising these questions, where you can maybe look at it and see that his game is a little off, that he's still producing offense at an absolutely top of the NHL level 5-on-5. So if you're doing that when your game is off a little bit, when you're not at your absolute sharpest, then you factor in everything we've seen from him in his career, where he's always been an elite 5-on-5 scorer, where he's always been a really good play driver. Yeah, he is absolutely, absolutely no doubt about it, an elite player. I'm kind of shocked we're actually having this conversation, to be perfectly honest. Actually, no, I take that back. I'm not shocked at all.
Well, I'm...
what am I saying? I'm not shocked.
No, recency bias is powerful,
it's
right?
A big thing.
And Pettersson's coming off a bad game, which is part of it, right? He had a bad game outright.
Yep.
Against the Colorado Avalanche, a rare bad game. Guy's 11th in the NHL in scoring this season, right? And that's been with the Canucks kind of struggling as a team to produce lately,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, I real chance that he still finishes in the top 10. Real chance that he still finishes and flirts with. I mean, they have 15 games left. One offensive explosion game is all it's going to take for this team to have, like, a couple guys get to 100,
mm-hmm.
right? There's sort of three guys with a shot at it. They're the guys you'd expect, Miller, Pettersson, Hughes. You have like one game where the power play goes off, you know, and they get like 3 points each or 4 points each. And you could have 300-point Canucks this season. It's probably not going to happen, but it's not like plus 800. It's like
no.
plus 300, you know, like 3-to-1 sort of odds. If you sort of expand the sample and look at the last three seasons or the last two seasons of hockey, so last 2 years, the following players have recorded more points in all situations than Elias Pettersson: Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, Nikita Kucherov, Leon Draisaitl, David Pastrnak, Mikko Rantanen, Matthew Tkachuk. End of list. That's it.
That's a list of elite forwards in the NHL.
And then following him, you'd get to like the next five up would be Panarin, Robertson, Marner, Nylander, JT Miller. Would you agree all of those guys are elite?
Uh-huh.
Point, Matthews.
Yep.
Ryan Nugent-Hopkins? Do we finally get into one who's
debate? Yeah, not elite.
Okay,
yep.
So my point is you have to go six more names
Shout
down.
Out to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, though.
Sick. And that doesn't even count his dope back checks. If you want to use the all-in-one numbers that also combine and capture value from other phases of the game, let's go last 3 years. Goals above replacement. This is the GAR stat over at Evolving Hockey. The following players rank ahead of Elias Pettersson: McDavid, Matthews, MacKinnon, Tkachuk, Pastrnak. End of list. Is that elite?
Mm-hmm.
You'd say that's elite. Even this season, by the way, if you look at it, MacKinnon, McDavid, Hyman. Good for Zach Hyman. You kill it, bud. And Austin Matthews, and then Elias Pettersson. And that's this season. That's this year by that number. If we use Dom LeCision's net rating model, you know I love to use
Dom LeCision's model. Of course it was going to come up.
Forwards with a higher net rating on the season to this point: McDavid, Hyman, Draisaitl. So there's some team effects there. Matthews, Kucherov, Pastrnak, Reinhardt, Barkov. MacKinnon, Kaprizov, Rantanen. Artemi Panarin, end of list. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Like, on the one side, there's every single quantifiable data point, points, underlying stuff, the most sophisticated publicly available all-in-one metrics all say that this guy's a top 10 forward in the NHL, across the board. On the other side, we've got a bunch of people in Vancouver who thinks he falls down too much and are mad that he didn't have a good game against the Avalanche. I don't know. You can decide which one you weigh highly. You'll be shocked to know where I sit.
Ryan texts in, the power play is an indictment of Petey's game, not a defense of his lack of production. Could Pettersson help the power play more? Yeah, absolutely he could. Of course he could. But it's not like it's just on him. It's not as if he is the only guy who's struggling to get the power play going right now. And again, we've seen him be a very productive power play player in his career. So this is so much of what it comes down to for me. Are you betting on, what is this? This is year six for him, right? So are you betting on 5.5 years of production from Elias Pettersson? Because remember, he was good as soon as he stepped into the NHL. Or are you betting on like a 6-week power outage for the power play here, right? Well, it's an easy decision for me.
I'll tell you what. I don't think anyone's going to make a lot of money betting against Elias Pettersson. At this stage of his career, I would advise against that position. That's it. We'll see how it goes. You know, people are now bringing up, you have like micro splits. Like, you have to bring up his goals, but only in big games, nebulously defined by me.
Yeah.
As like what, guys, if this team gets to where they want to go, Pettersson's going to score some big goals in big games against good teams. If they don't get to where they want to go, it's probably going to be in part because he doesn't. And that's going to shape the conversation too, but it's not going to be an indictment of his ability to do it. We've seen this guy not just score big goals, but like turn playoff games at the net front. Like, we've seen this guy do these things already. There's no question in my mind that he's going to, you know, have the ability to raise his game in big moments. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that he will. It doesn't necessarily mean that the Canucks as a team will. You know, and I look forward to continuing to debate it. That's part of the fun of sports.
Man, that's going to be fun.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy. I'm just having this, like, premonitions of Pettersson going like, you know, 1 point in a 6-game playoff loss or something like that. All those conversations.
Woo! But this is also part of what it means to cover or be a big
to be a
fan
good team,
of 100% a good team. You know, like,
this text came in. Johnny Mack said, "Do you think the drama and angst bursting through Canucks sports media, and I would throw the fans in there as well, Johnny Mack, over a mid-March loss to Colorado is a harbinger for mass hysteria when playoff hockey returns to Vancouver?"
Well, that's
yes, I do.
That's a lock.
Yes, I absolutely do. But I do, like, that's why I wanted to throw in the Dallas and Florida losses last night, right? Like, We're all getting back into this, right? We're all getting back into the groove of what it means to be a team at the top of the standings in March with the playoffs looming, with real expectations. So you're right, like the pressure and the attention and the focus and the criticism, that all comes with the territory, and that's fine. I'm not going to tell anyone, you know, don't be critical of the players or anything like that. We just also have to try to keep it in perspective a little bit, especially when it is, as Johnny Mack said, you know, midweek game in March to Colorado, not an actual playoff game.
So Pavel Bure's first season, because I've gone through the archives and like read all the coverage and stuff, right? Pavel Bure's first season, the Canucks make the playoffs 91-92, right? And, or is that his second season? Will you check that for me?
Yeah.
Because I have this on memory, and it might have been his second season they make the playoffs, but I think it was his first. And
91-92.
So 92, they make the playoffs, and Bure goes in the playoffs, right? He's rookie of the year. He's completely energized fans in Vancouver. And obviously there's a lot being written. How will Bure's game translate in the postseason? And he scores in this first game, but then he goes pointless in the next three. And after four games, the Vancouver Canucks are down 3-1 in the series to the Winnipeg Jets, and Bure has one goal. And you can imagine what the conversation was, right?
Oh, yeah.
Game 5, 4 points, goal and 4 assists. Canucks beat the Jets. Game 6 in Winnipeg. Hat trick, right? Game 7, they win. Bure doesn't score. And then they go into the next round against the Edmonton Oilers. So at that point, it's like, this guy, playoff hero. Like, you've already had the conversation two different ways
over the course of one series. Yeah.
And then what happens? He bumps into Esa Tiikkanen in the Edmonton Oilers. Esa Tiikkanen, it literally becomes Bure's backpack for an entire series. Bure scores one goal as the Canucks fall to the Edmonton Oilers. And the conversation starts again, right? And this is sort of how this works, right? If you're committed enough to the Skip Bayless hole puncturing thing, right? You can go through and change your mind 18 million times, and you can be like, Bure's game's not going to work in the postseason, and whatever you want to do, you know? But the fact of the matter is that it's way simpler to just be like, this guy's good. Playoffs are hard, you know? And that's going to be the truth. That's going to be the truth of the matter more often than not. So I would recommend we draw from that. Not that Pettersson's the type of goal scorer that Pavel Bure is. Almost no one is except Austin Matthews. But, you know, Pettersson is good. And move from there, and you will have a much clearer view of the situation in this player.
Yeah. And again, can he do more than he's done the last month? Sure. But again, everything about his career indicates that he will, in fact, do that. That he will go through stretches where he's phenomenal, where he's breaking games open, where he's showing you why he has the track record that he does.
Yeah. And because he's good, he's going to have some big games and big moments. And guess what? He's also going to have some disappointing games and big moments. And just don't overreact to them. That's my advice.
All right, there's your prerequisite, Elias Pettersson, is he elite, discussion for the day. Now, after practice, let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Just a couple of breakout drills we had to shore up. Obviously some one-on-one drills, a little bit dialed. Just a couple of things that you don't get a chance to do when you have a heavy schedule in February.
Some power play work and the entries as well. Is that key for you guys right now to trying to get the power play turned around?
Yeah, it's speed, more speed, and chasing down loose pucks. Like, you know, we got to learn that when there's a loose puck, let's go get it. I think we're losing. Our retrievals haven't been good. And when you have a good power play, your retrievals are really good. So you got to be in spots for retrievals. And it's work ethic. You know, everybody's looking for plays. It's not plays. It's work ethic. It's coming up with loose pucks.
Is that partly what you're looking for from Garley? In that, like, you've searched for different things on the power play. What is it about him now in that unit that you're looking for?
Well, I thought, like, when I put him out there, they scored a couple of goals. Him going backdoor, he actually does come up. He's very good at coming up with loose pucks. And actually, on the second, he's been one of our better, you know, entry guys. But, you know, that doesn't mean Lindy's not going to go. I could see Lindy being maybe getting back in there again. But, you know. We got other guys got to get on that line, that power play got to get going too. So it's just not one or two guys.
How much of Lindholm's struggles, and he says himself, you know, he's got to play a lot better, especially offensively. How much do you think in your conversations that's due just to how he's feeling and his comfort level and his confidence rather than just physically what he's doing?
Well, I think it's a partnership with, you know, like I got to try to get him in situations to make him feel comfortable. And also, you know, yeah, he wants to elevate his game also. And I think there will be an elevation. I think he's got too smart of a guy. But, you know, pushing the pace a little bit more. You know, he's in great spots, which is great. But there's times where we want to attack where he's got to get going too. So I think it's a, you know, I don't think he's far off. You know, last game, a lot of guys weren't that great. But I think he's the type of guy that's a smart guy. You know, he's done it before.
Because he's so conscientious defensively, and I think that's kind of his fallback position if things are going poorly, you know, at least defend well. Do you think he's too much in that mindset at times and not enough thinking about attacking? Or
yeah, I think that's a great question, because I think you got to find that, you know, I keep saying that sweet spot, when to go and when not to. You know, he's a 200-foot guy. So, you know, there's some times that maybe he should take off. But also, that's where you need wingers at forecheck. You know, that's where, like, guys like, you know, Potsy's learning that to time yourself where you're getting on the forecheck. Because if you're playing that 200-foot game and your wingers aren't forechecking, it's a tough night. I mean, you're basically playing defense all night. So I think, you know, we're trying to get situations where he gets some wingers that are going to really forecheck hard for him. Garley's really good at that. You know, when Garland and Dakota were together, they're pretty good tandem on the forecheck. That's why it's always good to have that guy more conscious. Same thing with Petey. You know, Petey sometimes lags behind, and that's why you need to make sure that your wingers are forechecking for him.
Rick, lots been made about the week here and practice and rest and everything else, but hockey players are creatures of habit. I mean, you've lived the life.
Sure.
Do you get antsy at all, like when there are so many days between games, just to to kind of get out of your rhythm a little bit?
No, not really. I think pockets of the year when you get chance to stay at home, see your family, but work at your game. That's really what you got to take advantage of. I went through the schedule with the players today. I showed them the month of March, how many days off they're getting, how many practice days we're getting, how many games we're playing. You should thrive in this environment. This is where I don't know how you'd be tired, like in games. You know, if you're going to lose a game, it shouldn't be because of fatigue. So I think it's a mindset. You know, we're in a, I hate to say it, uncharted waters for a lot of guys on this team. It's go time. There's 15 games left. It's get out of third and fourth gear. We got to get the fifth gear. It's not wait till April. Like, it's let's go. That's the message, and I think it starts in practice. You know, some guys still have to understand. Maybe in the past, March practices don't mean much, but they mean a lot now. So you got to, hate to say it, it's got to go another level.
Rick, you talked about Lindholm. When a guy comes to a new team, there's a lot of off-ice stuff going on, right? I mean, some guys, does that affect them more than others, that their minds may be a little bit somewhere else?
Well, absolutely. I know his family didn't come out till about a week, 2 weeks ago, so there's a long stretch. He didn't have his family. He has a newborn. So, yeah, some guys are affected by that. And as the organization, you try to help them out. Hopefully, guys are taking them out to dinner. You're spending a lot of time with the guys until his family comes back. So, yeah, some guys deal with better than others.
Rick, what do you want to see in the game tomorrow that will let you know that your team's taking advantage of these 2 days of practice?
Business-like. Forecheck, play fast, come up with loose pucks. You know, whether we're up three, down, or down, whatever, to stay in the system. You know, but for whatever reason, when we get a lead, our numbers go, like, we're not good. Our turnover rate goes high. We don't force the puck. I don't even want to say why. I hope it's not for guys' individual success. When you're up 3-0, you should not back off. You want to be aggressive but smart. And I think that's when you put the other team, they have the push. So you can catch a team on a 2-on-1. You know, or you catch them on a bad pinch. That's what I think that this next level for this team.
You kind of alluded to that. But when you get two early goals like you did in that last game, is there this subconscious mindset that maybe this is going to be an easy night? Because it happens not just to you guys, but lots of teams and lots of sports.
Can't have it. You can't have it. Like, just because you're up 2 or 3-0 doesn't mean the second four, I'm not going to go in because I don't know why I don't want to go in. You got to go in. You have to participate in everything we do. And if it's comfortable, then you better change your mindset because, you know, the next month is not going to be comfortable. When the games are, you know, especially in late April, they're very uncomfortable. So you might as well do it now, the mindset. Start now, today.
When people looked at the schedule and the 9-game homestand and it was Winnipeg and Colorado and sort of like those are the big challenges and then maybe it drops off. Now you get Washington and Buffalo. I know you're only focused on Washington, but I mean the definition of desperate teams that are bumping up against the playoff bar and probably last night in Seattle, I don't know if you watched their game. But
yeah, I watched.
Like, you know, for 20 years it's always been about Ovi. I know he's still there, but it seems like now they're much more about locking it down and they don't give up an awful lot.
No, they clog up the middle. And then you got Buffalo next. Another desperate. They're one of the hottest teams. They're desperate teams. We're playing desperate teams. Even if teams like that are out of it, they're playing their young guys. And they're, you know, we were there last year. You know, we were winning games. We were beating some half decent teams, even though we're out of it because the guys were trying to prove themselves. So there's no easy games. So that's the mindset you have to have.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. And as Rager texts in, Rick is fired up. Yeah. Hey, up 2-0, up 3-0. You still got to participate. You still have to be doing all of those staples that he has preached. And as he mentioned, you know, a bit of a counter to what we were saying about, you know, the Canucks having more energy, hopefully, than the Washington Capitals. They're out here on a road trip. But as he points out, and as was posed to him, a desperate team trying to hang in the playoff race, and also Buffalo, the next opponent up, another desperate team trying to hang in the playoff race. So, look, the Canucks do have things to play for, but that motivation gap, obviously one that Rick Tocchet is aware of, and it seems like a big focus for him right now is, as he put it in that presser, not waiting until April, not waiting until game one of the playoffs to try to get up to that playoff intensity, but to at least start ramping up and hopefully get there sooner rather than later for his team, which we haven't necessarily seen even in that 4-game winning streak right now.
Yeah. I mean, the Sabres, at least, I think, can challenge the Canucks in a different way. I mean, the Caps, you...
Sabres, I would say, are more dynamic.
Way more dynamic. Yeah. Especially when you don't have Demko. You know, because that's the other sort of subplot here, right? DeSmith played well, but, you know, one thing, Rick Tocchet talked at length there about, like, how the Canucks have played with a lead. Well, when you have a lead with Thatcher Demko, there's an aura around this team. And when you have the lead with Casey DeSmith. It's not an insult to DeSmith. It's just a little bit different. Right? In terms of how it feels for opposing teams, opposing coaches, opposing fans. There's a little more hope. Right? There's a little more hey, if we get one break, maybe
we're right back into this.
Yeah. So I think that's another thing that this team's gonna have to contend with and manage emotionally, right? That it's another good test for them. More than anything.
It's another part of the process of being a good team at this time of year.
You guys are good at tightrope walking? Do it without a net.
That's right. very exciting.
Man on a wire.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We'll take a break. Dmitry Filipovich is going to join us next. By the way, we've mentioned this a couple times, but Drancer and I both off next week. Brooke Ward filling in this time slot. So we'll have a week off, then we'll be back after that for the push to the playoffs. But one final segment to go before vacation, and it is with Dmitry Filipovich. That's next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. All right, it is final segment of the show on a Friday pre-vacation. Time for some of the most serious, intensive talk radio you've ever heard here on Sportsnet 650. It's Canucks Talk, Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, live from the Kintec Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And we are joined in studio by our pal, host of the Hockey PDO cast, with a working microphone and everything, Dmitry Filipovich.
It took a year and a half, but we finally figured out this microphone in the middle seat. And if you listen every Friday to this segment and you think we're normally silly, the last one before a vacation.
Before a week of vacation? Yikes.
This one's going to go off the rails.
Jamie was saying we should draft over-unders for how many bottles of rosé he'll drink on vacation, to which I suggested that he should buy Magnums.
So I could, like, mess up the market, basically.
Yeah.
By only buying Magnums of it?
Yeah. You should make yourself a goal of, like, a Magnum a day.
Oof. Oof.
I think you can do it.
Well, thank you for believing in me, buddy. We'll see. We'll see about that. I'll keep you updated. I'll try to keep a running tally.
Now, I want to give a fair warning before I ask Dmitry about the Washington Capitals.
Yeah.
Fair warning to our audience. We're going to go deep on a sandwich draft at the end of the segment, and it's going to go, like, long. Like, we're going to do in, like, a 10-round sandwich draft. So
with analysis of each pick.
So fair warning. Lots of sandwich talk coming up over the course of the segment. But first, what are the Washington Capitals?
Oh, man. You know what? For the purposes of this season, I think they're 29th in scoring right now, so they clearly don't have that much juice, like, offensively.
Mm.
I do think, though, they're on the right track. When you compare them in particular to a team like the Penguins, and those two franchises are always going to be linked because of the Crosby-Ovechkin connection, their stars clearly haven't aged the way Pittsburgh's have, where Ovechkin's goal scoring is down, Backstrom's essentially retired, Kuznetsov obviously got traded. But they've done a much better job of incorporating young players, guys they've drafted. If you look at their centers right now, Connor McMichael is their number one center, Dylan Strome, who they acquired, and then Hendrix Lapierre's are their 3C. They've got Ryan Leonard on the way. They've done a much better job of sort of preparing for the future and making smart moves on the margins. So they're obviously, it's interesting, they're better than the Penguins right now, but they're also way better set up for the future.
I think it was Jay Fresh on Twitter who a couple of weeks ago had the take that, like, the difference between the Caps and the Penguins is the Caps were well managed, but their star players fell off, whereas the Penguins' star players just kept being awesome. Just disastrous management putting a team around them.
Yeah.
It's like if you could have fused the two, they would have been a powerhouse still.
It's true. And I don't know which one is the more depressing reality,
seriously.
Right? Because you become attached to the star players, so you want to see them still at the height of their game. But
it's the Pittsburgh one.
It is because
you're wasting Sidney Crosby.
And there's
years.
No path future success with this group, right? It's going to take a massive teardown. At least the Capitals have already kind of gotten the early stages of that done. So, yeah, I think you're right on that.
So, of the four opponents the Canucks play this week, we got the Capitals, the Sabres, the Habs, the Flames. Not exactly a murderer's row, but no real bottom feeders necessarily in there either. Which of those teams is the most mid?
Oh, it's got to be the Flames, right?
Yeah, to me, it's either the Flames or the Caps.
Because they've had the claim of that for the past, like, I don't know, as long as I've been doing this professionally.
They are one of they might, other than the fact that they have won the Stanley Cup, which I don't know how that interacts here, but, like, they might be the most all-time mid franchise in the NHL.
Yeah. No, they certainly are. It's the Flames, like, without question, right? I just said the Capitals at least have a bit of a future path here with young players. The Sabres, obviously, I think have a very bright future, despite the fact it regressed a little bit this season. It's got to be the Flames by a long shot at that.
So Canucks have this run of games here. Caps, Sabres.
I just said this.
Just laid this out.
Right.
So, all right, let's talk sandwiches.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at lists of sandwiches, okay? I'm not going to lie to you. It's like a baked bean sandwich. That sounds terrible.
If you ask me which of these is the most mid team, I swear to God, Tom.
No. Not the most mid. Let's go with the most dangerous.
Well, it's got to be the Sabres. You're teaming up for that, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they've been playing much, but I think they're 8-3 in their last 11. Part of this is because the rest of that wildcard race in the East is so mediocre, but the door has been kind of, it's propped a little open.
It's not fully open,
but it's getting there. I think Dom's playoff probability still has him at about 6% or so. Now it was 1%. Like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I think that just speaks to the volume of teams that are kind of in that race. They're going to have to leapfrog them. And it's tough this time of year to make up that ground.
1% is pretty much officially dead in Dom's model. No one's come back from 1%. People have come back from 2%, but 1% is like pretty much dead. So would be a pretty massive outlier relative to the 6-year history of that projection model for them to make.
And I think for the Sabres, I think their next like upcoming 5 or 6 games are all against teams other than the Canucks, of course, that they're going to be directly competing with here as well. Like they play like Tampa Bay in there, Detroit again. Like they play a bunch of teams that winning will not only give them 2 points but also take a game off their opposition as well. So the Sabres are in it, which as recently as 2 or 3 weeks ago seemed like impossible, and so that's pretty cool.
So usually we spend this segment scouting Canucks upcoming opponents, but Canucks upcoming opponents, I think we've already done it. Like we don't need to spend more time talking about these teams, but it's a little too early in the segment to draft sandwiches. So
it is.
So I want to ask you this.
Okay.
How should we consider Vegas at this point, given how mid they've been for this long and yet how impressive they look on paper?
Yeah. I don't know if you've gotten to watch their past couple games. They got pretty lucky to come back and win that game in Seattle.
I thought so.
And then they got just thoroughly outplayed by the Flames last night.
Yeah.
And even if you date back to the game that Vancouver played in Vegas.
Yeah, they look bad.
The speed difference between the two teams in particular was pretty eye-popping, right? And for all the talk about how Vegas has this massive size advantage and all the talent and everything, like they just can't really skate really quickly, particularly, ironically, without Mark Stone, who's their slowest skater. But he speeds them up because of his passing, his quick decision-making. And so, yeah, I would be pretty worried for their sake. It seems like they've at least gotten out of the hilarious outcome range of missing the playoffs this season after that win in Seattle. Well, what's the likelihood?
They're 4 points up on the Wild, and they play each other a couple times.
Okay. Well,
I think it's at least once, but I think there might be 2 head-to-heads left.
Okay. Well, it's certainly not a foregone conclusion by any means.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they play twice.
That's the thing. Like, they actually have to start playing better to make the playoffs for any of this to matter, because it's like, all right, well, when they get healthy with Mark Stone and Tomas Hertl, well, they actually need to get to that point first. And for weeks now, they haven't really shown that they're a team to be feared.
In the Eastern Conference playoff race, we were talking about it a little bit with Buffalo, but like the Islanders are surging, but now they've lost a couple in a row. Detroit is in free fall. The Washington Capitals are not very inspiring. You know, Buffalo's playing better, but they've got a lot of ground to make up. New Jersey has a lot of ground to make up. Who are the favorites for you to kind of break out of that morass and claim that final wild card spot?
Yeah. Did you include Philly there as well? I think they're third in the Metro, but they're reeling as well.
Bit of a point cushion, but you're right. They are reeling.
Their next 6 games are against like Bruins, Leafs, Bruins, Hurricanes, Panthers, or something like that.
So yeah, maybe throw Philly in there.
That could escalate pretty quickly for them. It's wide open there. Honestly, it's crazy because I was watching that Lightning game last night against the Rangers, and the first period I'm like, man, the Lightning, they're so slow and old, they just don't have it. And then Point and Kucherov are like, we're just not losing tonight, and they combined for 6 goals in the final 2 periods. So I don't know. None of those teams are very inspiring. Like, it honestly, you may as well just put all the names in a hat and pick them out. It'd be really fun if the 2 ones to come out of it were somehow Buffalo and New Jersey, or 2 golden childs from the start of the season. But they dug themselves such a big hole that it's tough to see that happening.
I feel like when you have this many meh teams, like if one team going 8-1-1. One of these teams will go 8-1-1 over the next 10, and they're going to be in. You know what I mean? Like, straight up.
That's what's happened in the West, how Nashville has separated themselves. Because Nashville was in that Calgary, Minnesota, Seattle tier for a long time. They're 8-0-2 in their last 10.
They kind of ended the discussion.
Boom, they're in.
Yeah.
Right? I actually did want to ask you about Nashville. Yeah. Like, is it just a 10-game sample there, or is it should the team, whoever? Because we've been kind of operating under the assumption of, like, oh, you really want to avoid Vegas. You want to try to be in whatever position at the top of the standings that gets you Nashville. But Is that going to come back to bite some team potentially in the first round?
Yeah, it could. I think they're going to be in a very annoying matchup. They clearly don't have the high-end talent, but with all due respect to Philip Forsberg and Roman Josi, that the Canucks do. But it's very similar from like a stylistic perspective, where they're a very like just high-effort team. All of their best traits are forecheck, rebound, cycle, kind of controlling possession in that way. They're deep. Here's the thing, though. They're playing really well right now, and UC Saros has turned it around as well. And so a team that can kind of control possession that way and just take massive amounts of time off the clock and then have a hot goalie, like that's a recipe for a very frustrating series for a top seed in the West, where you come into it being like, well, we have more talent than them. And then all of a sudden you're down 2-0 early. You can't get anything past Saros. You never have the puck, and it can be a really long series in that way. So I think Nashville's legit, Tom. I feel like I've been proven correct in my in my take on them. I know you were high on them.
I was high on them going into the season.
Yeah. Once again, you're correct in your analysis.
Once again, I'm correct in my analysis. And here's the thing. Nashville is the most interesting team to watch this summer because they have $27 million in cap space. They're a desirable location. We know that players want to go sign there. And I think they're like a great Jake Gensel spot, for example. They have 9 picks in the first 4 rounds. They have the most valuable player in the market in UC Saros. And they have an AHL team that won 19 games in a row that's filled with top prospects they drafted.
And that should be the favorite to win the Calder, given the presence of, you know, Zachary Leroux and who's the Philip Tomasino and on down the list.
Well, no, Svechkov, Afanasyev, they're through the roof in terms of
Parsonen.
Prospects. Parsonen, for sure. And they have a playoff team in the NHL right now.
Yeah.
So you put all those things together, and like, if they're aggressive this summer, I think they have a chance to build something really special, and I haven't really seen many people talking about that, so that's pretty cool.
Shout out to Barry Trotz.
Yeah.
The Devils.
Hmm.
They've changed coaches to Travis Green. The results have been fine. I mean, it hasn't been like a big coaching bump by any means. They've lost, what, 3? So they've 2-3 in their last 5, but they're not dead. And yet, at no point do they look like, aside from Timo Meier getting off the schneid, it just feels like this team's still dead in the water. What fundamentally has gone wrong for them aside from injuries?
Yeah, I think it's that. And also you just get into this funk where it kind of like just spirals and it's just tough to pull yourself out of it. I don't think that should affect our like view of them moving forward long term. Like, I'm still going to be high on them heading into next season.
Yep.
But yeah, sometimes you just get to this point where it's just, I mean, look, they won last night in Dallas, but they gave up a goal in the first 14 seconds of the game. Like, it's been just that kind of year where everything seemingly just goes off the rails very quickly for them. So, yeah, I'm very curious to see how the rest of the season goes for our old friend Travis Green, and if he can do enough to convince them to potentially keep him on beyond just the interim tag this season.
Yeah, I think the results are going to have to be better.
If they make the playoffs.
Well, for sure.
But that's a big if.
Yeah.
Or if they at least get some like momentum, at least charge for it.
At the same time, though, look at the talent on that team compared to some of the ones where I know, like Washington and Philly. It's like they should conceivably have, 10 more points than those teams down the stretch if they play the way they can. They haven't all year, so.
Yeah, it's tough. All right, can we do it?
All right, we doing this? Yeah, we're doing the sandwich draft? So unlike our immensely unpopular pizza draft, we're not building.
People didn't like that one?
No.
Well, it turned out some less than appetizing pizzas, but we're not building sandwiches. We're drafting established types of sandwiches.
Yes.
All right.
And we're going to establish beforehand no hot dogs.
Sure. Right. That's fine.
What about like, and so burgers?
I said
a burger is a sandwich.
A burger is a sandwich.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Burger is eligible, as and so is like a lobster roll.
Sure. Mm, okay. Yeah. But no wraps.
No wraps.
No.
Definitely no wraps.
All right. Just kind of get the ground rules out there,
like you
man.
You can't draft a burrito in a sandwich draft.
No.
No.
Okay.
Okay.
That's it.
Well, you're the one who usually tries to skirt the rules of these drafts.
No, well, he certainly will at some point. I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Who's going first? You want to give Jamie the first
pick?
No,
you can go first.
I don't have any very strong takes on my number one pick, so.
Okay. I'm going to go with a, honestly, the one that I eat the most.
Best player available.
Best player available, the one that I eat the most, an American-style sub.
Oh, nice.
All right.
Okay. And I believe that this pick covers everything from like a pub sub, but also like an Italian hero.
We all know what a submarine sandwich is.
Sub sandwich.
We got a submarine sandwich.
Number one pick. It allows me to eat an entire loaf of bread and pretend it's one meal.
Nice.
Get some veggies in there.
Hard to beat that.
Yeah, hard to beat that. All right. Submarine sandwich. Now, do you want to like, you got any favorite toppings in there?
I'm pretty open, man. I like tuna on it. I like turkey and bacon. I like just turkey. I like fried chicken on it.
Just put anything in there.
It doesn't matter to me. Italian hero.
So take that roll, slice it in half, stick whatever is you want in there. It's going to be good.
So when you say that, though, is that encompassing like a fried chicken sandwich as well?
No.
No, it's not. Okay.
No,
because you said you like fried chicken.
I'm just, I'm more talking about like the vessel, the concept, right?
Which a like submarine sandwich.
There you go.
Yeah.
Jamie. We're all familiar with
it. I think we get it. I think we can all picture what a submarine sandwich is.
So I just want to note.
All right. So guys, here's what it is.
All right. Dimitri?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that was a good pick. You know what? I'll go with a grilled cheese.
Mm. Oh, that's a really good
very
pick.
Very strong.
Really good pick.
I love a little grilled cheese with tomato soup. I mean, that'll get me through the day.
Can't beat it. Yeah. It's a classic. Yeah. You can. Another great thing about grilled cheese, you can do so many different things.
That's true.
It. You can dress it up.
Versatile, yeah.
Simple. You can put some bacon in there.
And it's all good.
Yeah.
You can do so
tomato,
many different
things. I like tomato and onion in my grilled cheese.
Now, people are upset that you declared a lobster roll a sandwich.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know. Do we want to take it out of the running?
No, it's a clear sandwich.
All right. I'm going to go Montreal smoked meat sandwich for my first pick.
Strong.
I'm biased. I went to school in Montreal, but those things are absolutely elite.
Are you a Schwartz's guy or a Soden guy?
I was a Schwartz's guy.
How often were you eating them?
Not as often as you'd think, probably, but like, I don't know, a couple times a month.
Nice.
Something like that. Okay. And they were awesome.
Are you a platter guy or an individual sandwich guy?
Individual sandwich.
That's a bad take, but that's okay.
Well, hey, we're drafting sandwiches, so that's all that matters here. So I'll do smoked meat, and then I got the snake pick here as well. I'm gonna go with like a fast food spicy chicken sandwich.
Nice.
So like Wendy's is my favorite, but there's lots of other ones out there.
They're all good.
Shout out to Wendy's spicy chicken sandwich.
You ever get that with cheese? Try adding cheese.
Yeah.
Game changer.
Very good.
All right.
Okay. I want to circle back to the concept of subs.
Yes.
Can I take a meatball sub?
I think that
I think that's distinct from like as a
look,
specific
look.
Sandwich. I think as
you know, actually,
as someone who has the rights to submarine sandwich, I'll allow it.
What do you think, Jamie?
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Cuz otherwise it's like I could have been like I'll take two normal slices of bread as a sandwich. You know what I mean? And then so, like, I think you got to allow some flexibility.
That's
flexibility
right.
I also think it's a very distinct
you know
type
what?
Of sandwich.
You know what? To clarify things, because I apparently didn't, I'm just going to change my first pick
what
to Italian hero. Okay?
All right.
What
do
you
right.
mean by sub?
I mean, we got to define our terms here, guys.
You know, I went defining it, and you were like, this doesn't need to be defined.
I think it needed a lot more
we defined. Didn't even make it through the second round before it needed definition, further definition.
That's
so.
Why I was poking and prodding. I didn't want to give it away, but I wanted to
okay,
know.
Meatball sub.
Okay.
You got it?
Yeah.
That's your pick.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I'm going to go with... Now, you guys let me know if this is too broad, but I want to go with breakfast sandwich.
That's...
I think you have to take
like
a form of meat in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I guess anything can be a breakfast sandwich. You eat it at breakfast.
I guess...
Just like bacon and eggs.
Right, okay. Well, no, I'm going to go with this then. I'm going to go with egg, and sausage patty on McMuffin. Or no, sorry, just what are they actually called? English muffin.
So you're just taking a sausage and McMuffin?
Pretty much.
I mean, it's elite. I can't blame you. Look, I name-checked a specific item on a menu. I don't care. It's amazing. Sausage and egg McMuffin. Can't beat it.
And then for my third pick, I'm going to go banh mi.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Feel very good
strong.
About it.
Strong. That's strong right there.
Okay. I'm going to go with a bacon and egg breakfast sandwich, which I would prefer to the sausage. So I'm glad you left that on the
board. On English muffin. Yep. Fair.
Oh, dude. Okay.
Yeah. We all make mistakes.
I prefer sausage and egg. So... I think that was the correct order. You were the one saying we got to analyze the picks. You got any analysis for us, buddy?
I like bacon better than sausage.
That's all right, let me tell you guys all about bacon.
Whoa. What's a bacon and egg? What are we talking about
here? I
also
appreciate that he was like, you have to specify a type of meat.
Well, because I wanted to know if I could take a bacon and egg breakfast sandwich.
All right.
I'm up. Who texted this in? Colin and Caribou said, whoever drafts a good beef dip wins this draft. Beef dip is my next pick. Man, I got smoked meat and beef dip. I am loving life right now. This is fantastic. So I'll take beef dip.
Got nothing for breakfast.
With my
though,
next
bro.
One. No, that's true. That's fine.
This reminds me of our Thanksgiving draft where you took like one. Like, what were you taking? You're taking like one very specific.
I took, well, I don't
type.
Know. I had like
you took bread.
Yeah, I think I did at the end.
That was the one that we all
which
made
was
fun
great.
Of.
Okay, so I'm going to do the beef dip, and then I'm going to go for, like, an authentic, really good Philly cheesesteak.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
So there you go.
You like beef sandwiches,
I do. I absolutely do.
That was a couple beefy picks.
Okay, I'm going to take this. Here's my analysis of it. I'm going to take this because conceptually, I love the item. I've yet to find a satisfactory version of this in Vancouver. But a chicken parm sandwich. Because I love chicken parm. I've yet to find a good sandwich. If anyone that listens knows a good one in Vancouver, please hit up the inbox. Jamie will let me know what you say because
I will. So we're taking chicken parm Rex for Dimitri here.
Please.
I love chicken parm sandwiches. It's a very good call.
Do you know a good one in Vancouver?
I don't.
Yeah.
I eat them in New York.
Yeah, there you go.
Chicken cutlet. Okay. I'm gonna take Crocs as a
like croque monsieur and
croque monsieur and croque madame. I'm putting my stamp in on both. For those who don't know, a croque is a French inside out deconstructed grilled cheese with cheese on the top. You eat it with a knife and a fork. It is fantastic. I'm taking croques for my pick.
Sure.
And then I've got to go one more. I'm going to go with a I'm just trying to think of what they're called. It's a Chicago style.
Good sign.
No, that's the Chicago style.
Italian beef?
Italian beef. That's what I'm talking about.
From AJ's?
Yeah. Well, from not from AJ's. From You're right. They do. I'm not going to bring up another one that I also like because AJ's is the best. Dimitri, your go.
Give me a Cubano.
That's a good one.
That's a very good pick.
That's a good pick.
Strong. Yeah. Strong pick.
Yeah.
All right. Should we wrap it up here?
Yeah, I think we can.
Yeah?
No.
You want to keep going?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
No. I've got more picks.
All right.
We've got time.
I'm going to go classic PB&J, man.
Oh.
You can whip it up in a moment. Great snack.
There's your breakfast sandwich.
Yeah, sure.
And let's come back one more round.
All right.
My God.
Trance is like sitting on this golden pick.
We want to go 10
rounds.
Needs
to get it in.
I do.
I love doing these drafts because it's such like an obvious thing, but we all are like Googling types of sandwich.
No, I'm making a list of our picks so that I know I won.
Okay.
Yeah, go. It's your pick, Jamie.
No. Oh, I got to do another one.
Yeah.
Oh,
man. You're in the snake spot.
PB&J. And you know what? I'm going to go chicken salad. Like a good chicken salad.
Weird take.
I love chicken salad, man. It's delicious.
Dim?
Can I go fried chicken sandwich here?
Yeah.
Has someone done that? Jamie has?
Yep. Fast food spicy chicken sandwich.
That's right.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm out of sandwiches. Anyone have a good list right now?
What pass?
We
haven't taken Clubhouse.
Yep.
We haven't taken BLT.
I already have the bacon and egg, though. But you know what? Give me a BLT.
Okay, perfect.
Give me a BLT.
A lot of people are angry about BLT slipping in the inbox.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to take a muffaletta and move on with
you just wanted to say muffaletta.
I just really like muffalettas. Okay. I want some jardinera on there.
We gotta wrap it up.
Okay.
Read the list.
I got
an extra one. That's fine.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, because you picked first and last.
Oh.
It's fine. Whatever.
Okay. I got an Italian hero, an egg and sausage patty on English muffin. I got banh mi. I got croc. I got Chicago-style Italian beef. I got muffuletta. That's six. Yeah, we all have six.
Okay.
Dimitri has a grilled cheese, a meatball sub, a bacon and egg on English muffin, chicken parm, Cubano, BLT. You have Montreal smoked meat, fast food, spicy chicken sandwich, beef dip, Philly cheesesteak, PB&J, and chicken salad, and also clogged arteries, presumably. Yeah.
I love mine. I feel like mine really represents me. I'm so happy.
Yours is absolutely the degenerate one.
You know how every GM is like, oh, yeah, we got a lot of guys that are way higher on our list. We didn't think they'd be there. That's me right now with this draft. Yeah,
Jamie's
let's go. Jamie's
fist bumping like Jonah Hill in Moneyball.
You've got all of your sandwiches, if you wrap them in paper, are like the paper is see-through by the time you 100%, eat it.
100%, and I'm so excited about that. So excited. All right, we had so many people text in. So many people text in about sandwiches. So thank you for playing along and enjoying that with us, guys. We appreciate it. Having some fun on a Friday afternoon. Enjoy the game tomorrow. Enjoy the games next week. And enjoy Brooke Ward on the radio in our time slot. Drancer and I are on vacation, so we'll talk to you in about 10 days. Have a good one. It is Sportsnet 650.